Capital Call on a Friday morning, brought to you, of course, by Phillips 66. We started with the House last week, so Senator Daniels, good morning. Thanks for coming this morning.
Good morning, Charlie. Good morning to everybody in Bartlesville. I want to start taking just a little moment of personal privilege. A good friend of ours and a former representative, Steve Martin, his very dear wife, Barbara, passed away last week. I've been out of Bartlesville, so I'm sure that you've been broadcasting it here on the radio, but on behalf of all those in the legislature who worked with Steve and called Steve a friend, and he's certainly a friend of mine, and so was Barbara's, I just send him our sympathies and so sorry for his loss. A great gal, and Steve, absolutely a wonderful person. So we wish him and his family well.
She always was alongside him on parades and public events, and was a part of his term as representative.
Yes, and my son's sixth grade teacher. So, in a particular subject. So, this week, it's funny the big issues that arise that you're not really anticipating, and I'll just touch on this briefly. We've had a difference of opinion among the people who are pro-life in Oklahoma. And it all happened in the Senate. We had a bill that would essentially have repealed all the abortion-limiting programs that we have in Oklahoma that have tried to take the Roe versus Wade decision and work back from that, trying to preserve life. And a bill was authored to literally say that Oklahoma declared the unborn to be persons, as I believe they are, and to be fully protected under the Constitution, and therefore that Oklahoma would ignore all federal laws, federal or state regulations, and court decisions that said otherwise. And in that bill, it repealed everything that we've done. So had that bill passed and been challenged and the courts tossed it out, that would have taken all of our statutes that we do have to protect life in Oklahoma. They would have been null and void, and there would have been no limit on abortion in Oklahoma, in my view. So instead, leadership advanced, and it's passed out of committee anyway, a bill that says if and when Roe versus Wade is overturned, and that is confirmed by the Attorney General of the state of Oklahoma, then we, Oklahoma, will go back to the anti-abortion laws that we had before Roe, where it is a felony. And then all of our statutes that protect life will be repealed. So it's called a trigger bill. I think if it passes, we will be five states who have gone this direction. It's very disturbing and distressing that there's been this schism among those who support life. And I hope that there will be a reconnection and a mending of fences on this very, very important issue. But I did support this trigger bill in committee, and we will see where that goes from there. Quickly, also, as a campaign, one of the campaign pieces of Governor Stitt and something that is near and dear to the Senate's heart and is on our Senate agenda, we advanced in committee this year, this week, five significant reform bills that would give the governor the hiring and firing authority for the Health Care Authority, Mental Health, Department of Corrections, Transportation, and Juvenile Affairs. These bills would abolish the commissions and would also give and maintain Senate confirmation power. So this is as much like the federal system as we can get over these five agencies. And this would immediately make the accountability directly to the governor and the other elected officials in Oklahoma. That was part of his platform, part of the Senate's platform. We also advanced out of committee the legislative oversight budget act that would create this office within the legislative office of the House and Senate to do performance audits and have subpoena power and discovery power of all the documents, programs, and reports of the agencies in order to also gain greater accountability, especially over the spending of taxpayer dollars. So those were some rather large things that have happened just in the past 8 days of the legislative session on the Senate side.
Well, on the performance audits is something I know you were talking about this same time last year, and certainly it came up in the campaign last fall as well, so I'm not surprised that those moved forward.
Well, and thank you for bringing that up, Charlie. We did put in place a performance audit commission a couple of years ago. This committee would now sort of oversee them, and I think after a while that idea might go by the wayside and we would stay focused on this legislative office. But it's early days yet. You know, it hasn't actually advanced. And one more thing, and then I'm going to let Representative Fincher have the rest of the time. They passed constitutional carry in the House. We passed it in the Senate. The governor signed it. All the current restrictions on owning or possessing a firearm remain in place. The only thing that's different is you do not have to seek the government's permission through a permit to carry or possess a firearm. Yes, there's some cursory training that will no longer be required, but the vast majority of people who own or and carry guns do get not only that training, but additional training. The Oklahoma Self-Defense Act remains in place. All the places you can't carry remain in place. And just because this was interesting for Bartlesville, and I think I commented to Garrett about this, the House passed a bill that said, in a park of any size that's owned by a public trust or a nonprofit, you could limit it to conceal carry only. And I believe that would capture public, would capture the kiddie park because it is a nonprofit organization. So I'm doing some more research on that, but I've been asked numerous questions about that. I've now read the bill. I've consulted with Lisa Beeman about it, and we actually do believe that it would also include the kiddie park. So I yield my time, Representative Fincher.
I'm not sure I can fill up the rest of it, but thank you for doing that.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Any specific things you want to talk about, or you want me just to jump in?
Well, feel free to jump in, but somewhere along the conversation, just because it's something that you in a column that you released, I want to be sure and cover the education-related topics as far as everything from substitute teacher and also retired teachers coming back, and also some of the in lieu of legislation.
Right. Those are things that we'll be hearing on the House floor coming up. One of that is for the substitute teachers. They're actually increasing the number of days that has that you can hire a substitute teacher who's non-certified for the year. I think it goes up to 145, which is actually much of the year. We are doing what's called in lieu of. You get a flexible benefit allowance, and if you opt out of it because you're going, you can be on another plan with, say, a spouse or somebody else, you only get $60 a month, even though the allowance is a, you know, close to $1,000 or more, depending on your status. This would allow it to go up to $300 a month. The whole idea is it's actually less expensive for us if you take that money and go elsewhere rather than encouraging everybody to be on the state plan and paying the copay for that. We're looking at retired teachers being able to come in, and there was a COLA filed for teacher retirement. Those are all going to be interesting to talk about as we get into the budget situations as we work on that. As mentioned, the Senate passed bills on how to restructure for the board. The House passed bills how to restructure. We'll negotiate them in the committee, but I think from everything I've heard, there's actually been really good agreement, so I don't really expect that there will be an issue with that.
I think the main difference is that we abolished the commissions, and you kept
them, yes.
The commissions. So that's the...
We kept
if it's a sticking point, that's the one sticking point I see.
Right, and part of it is, one of the nice things about the democratic system that we have here in the U.S. and in Oklahoma is you have the balancing of power among the Senate, the House, and the governor. And it's supposed to be really hard to get things changed. I mean, you don't want something that's simple for things to change. And so part of it is, it requires all of us who have slightly different interests to come together on common cause. And we have to do something that's not only good for now, but it's got to be good for later. And I keep telling people, it doesn't matter which party ends up holding the majority, it has to be good governance regardless, and that's what we're trying to head for.
Absolutely. I think that's something that people should be able to agree on.
Right, good governance, that's what we're trying to get to.
Yeah. I believe the House took some action cleaning up medical marijuana legislation, and I will refer to the pun but not bring it up.
Cleaning up the, yes. We shall leave it unnamed,
okay.
But the you can read about it. But the we did pass a bill on medical marijuana, and the whole goal for that, and I want to thank Senator Daniels for, what was it, 13 meetings you went down to Oklahoma City on? It just kept going.
I lost count. It was all very educational.
They had numerous people involved. They had the people who wrote the state questions saying, oh, we didn't like what we did. We had you had experts, you had people from large, big weed, hate to call it that, but you know, large corporations. And of course, part of their goal is coming in and wrapping their arms around everything. And you're very well aware of how this comes on. I think overall they did a great job of trying to balance all the competing interests. But, and it passed 93, 94 to 5. I was one of the five who voted against it. And actually, I really liked much of it. But this gets back to what I was telling people when I was campaigning. They said, what is your opinion on medical marijuana? I said, you know, it doesn't matter because we're going to follow the will of the people. And I had a couple of concerns of the bill aside from the fact that it seemed that we were creating an awfully big regulatory structure for stuff that used to be done on alleys and in street corners. But one of the things that came up out of that is, I don't know if you know, but a third of our homes in Oklahoma are rentals, basically. So about around a third, a little under a third of the people actually rent the property that they live on. State Question 788 allowed you to, for personal consumption, grow your own marijuana, up to six plants, had some limitations on that. Unlike most other landlord-tenant acts where landlords can go in and put in restrictions at the beginning, this one said right out from the start, you have to have written permission from your landlord to grow marijuana. So suddenly we're disenfranchising anybody who has, and this is only for personal use. Commercial growers go under different things. But we're immediately disenfranchising anybody who has a need and has a license for personal use of medical marijuana or is a caregiver for somebody because they have to go out and get written permission right off the bat. And so that was, you know, put in as landlord rights, and I'm very sympathetic to that argument, but at the same time, we had the issue of people I don't think would have said, oh, but if you rent, you can't grow. That wasn't something that people voted for. Now, one thing that was in there that I thought was really good that follows from our smoking laws is the ability of landlords to prohibit smoking within the residence and within 10 feet, mm-hmm. and that's a very good thing that we had to have happen.
Well, I might just interject here because we do differ on this, is that the private property right aspect was very important, and need to remind folks that because this was statutory, there are any number of changes that are coming down. But I think the rights of those who own rental properties to limit what goes on in those rental properties, private property rights were kind of a big deal. To those of us working on the task force.
Mm-hmm. And I agree with that particular aspect, but because unlike others where you would have it in your lease agreement to start with, this says, well, it doesn't matter what the lease agreement says, you have to go seek the written permission to start with. And that was an issue. And one of the other things that I think came out of this is because this has just been passed by the people of Oklahoma, mm-hmm. I really would have preferred that we wait for 1 year, see what the problems were, and then enact it. And then, you know, we could show the problems and we could then enact something around it now.
Okay. Well, it sounds as though there's
but more. But we're ahead of the game now.
Yes.
more to be heard on that topic because the two sides still have to come together and talk about it.
Well, I think her side's winning.
Well.
We're going to have a lot
more. I'll take
more
that bill. As a yes.
Till the statute is signed, nobody won. But. I hear you. We've just about a minute left or so. What's the next week going to hold for you? You're picking up more and more from the other chamber.
Well, actually, the next couple of weeks, we're going to be hearing all the bills that came out of the Senate committee in the Senate chamber. You know, constitutional carry was unusual because mm-hmm. they fast-tracked it over to us. Mm-hmm. So we're literally going to be on the floor morning and afternoon for the next couple of weeks. And then we're regrouping those of us who are committee chairmen to start to receive House bills in our committee, and we're negotiating who's going to author House bills, Senate bills on the other side. So it's all in the weeds for most people, but it's a new phase of the legislative session for us.
Okay. Capital Call brought to you this morning by Phillips 66. Bruin Buzz on the way.
That's not the sound of a full tank. That's the sound of not missing her soccer game.